All right, it's time for us to begin our class in here tonight. Just by way of review, here are some things that we've covered so far in our time together. And we have a few more classes together after tonight. But looking at tonight, we are going to be talking about what we can do in relationship to changing things about our lives. Whenever bad things happen, which they do from time to time, we usually get this kind of system, and you can move these things around a little bit, but here's generally the idea of what bad things happen in our lives. We think about it a little bit. Does that get your attention? Whenever that item, whatever that event takes place, it gets your attention. You think about it maybe a little bit. You might talk to somebody, or you might not talk to somebody about it, you know, depending on if you're a stuffer or not, right? We talked about that last time. Like, you may or may not talk to somebody about this, but it's on your mind quite a bit. You might be praying about it, which hopefully you are. That's something that should be part of our process, praying about it, bringing that before God. We might take appropriate actions that we can take in dealing with whatever that item is. And when we've done everything we can, and it's still unresolved, have you been there before? How many of you have worked on a project? I mean, this is random, but worked on a project, and you've done everything you can for that project. You're waiting on Amazon to bring you the right glue to continue, or waiting on something else to come in place for you to continue whatever this project is, but I've done everything I can with it. But then you want to mess with it a little bit, right? You just want to, maybe if I just do this little thing, and then you mess it all and make it worse. Have you done that? Okay. Try and tinker with it maybe too much. It's in a good place. Just leave it alone. We get to a place in dealing with the things that come up in our lives, getting to the trials that come up in our lives. We get to a point where I've done everything I can. I need to leave it in the hands of God. But what are we doing? Is it still in the forefront of our minds? Can you ever just set it aside? Like a little box I'm going to sit in the corner and forget about for a couple months? Have you found that box in your house? So you can't just set it aside, right? I can't forget about whatever that thing is. But we might need, because it becomes our focus. And you focus on that thing so much. There was a time Karen and I were trying to paint inside, and we had this boxer puppy. I don't know if you've ever had boxers or seen boxers, but they have a little bit of energy. And we were trying to paint. And in Paraguay, they have like you have oil paint, that's all you have. You don't have all these different options and kind of stuff. You have oil paint, right? And it's like detailed kind of oil-based painting, and the puppy was in the way. And so you know what I did? It's like, well, I'll just put a piece of tape on its foot. And all of a sudden, that's all he could focus on. It's all he could focus on. It was masking tape. It wasn't like, you know, gorilla duct tape. Don't look at me like that. You know, had he just kept walking, it would eventually just come off. But he started gnawing on it and getting, you know, saliva all over it, and it just made it worse, right? And he was busy over in the corner dealing with that while we painted, right? It was perfect. But sometimes that happens to us with our trials, right? We can't stop just picking at it and trying to work around it, and sometimes it makes it worse. Our anxiety levels go up. Everything, because we're focused on whatever that thing is, and we just turn inside out like a contortionist, dealing with trying to whatever we can. And we need to change our focus sometimes. And in doing so, our service to others becomes an outlet to change that energy outward, to move our focus outward instead of focusing on self. Now, this is in general talking about a situation where I've done everything I can, I've put it in the hands of God, I've taken all accurate and appropriate steps to handle this thing, and it's a situation where I need to change my focus. This is not the answer to every single trial that comes in your life, but it is an option for different things that come again. Another tool in your tool belt in dealing with trials that come into our lives. Sometimes we're at the point in our trial that I need to look outwards and help other people. And we've seen this in Scripture. It was prophesied that Christ was going to be like this, that he will shepherd his flock. Isaiah talks about this, a prophecy concerning Christ. It's that reason that we see this talked about in Matthew. Matthew quotes from Isaiah 53:4, talking about what Christ was doing. When evening came, they brought him many who were demon-possessed, and he cast out spirits. This was to fulfill what was spoken. So when we look at the early ministry of Christ and what he was doing, do you think he had something on his mind? Could we make this analogy and make this kind of analogy as well, that he might have had something on his mind, but serving others is why he was there, helped in all those things. Of course, he also had moments when he needed to get away from everybody and go up on the mountain and pray, and you might need that as well. But he was there for a reason, to serve other people. Right? He was there to serve. We see in Matthew 9, Jesus was going through all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, healing every kind of disease, every kind of sickness, seeing the people. So when we are focusing on self, do we see anybody else? We don't, right? We're inward focused. And maybe even somebody shares with you something that's going on in their life. And maybe I'm like, well, have you heard my story, right? And my story trumps your story. Maybe you've had those conversations with people before. And so we get so inward focused, but we're not seeing the needs of other people. Christ was there to serve. He was seeing the needs. And of course, he could see them in a very different way. He could see them and tear down all their barriers and look into their hearts and see their needs very differently. But it's interesting that in this particular instance, he felt compassion on them because they were distressed and dispirited like sheep without a shepherd. He was able to see the most important issue, the most important need that they had. Right? He was specialized for that. They may not have had the best clothing. They may not have had the best shoes. They may not have had 3 squares a day, but their most important need was they didn't have Christ. They didn't have spiritual leadership like they needed to have. In Mark chapter 10, "And whoever wishes to be first among you shall be slave of all." Do you remember the context? What's the context in Mark 10? Why was this coming up? What were they talking about? Who's most important? Greatest in the kingdom? So we have, the disciples there. About sitting on his right, the James and John, the sons of Zebedee, coming there and they're asking for this honor. They want to be first. The going first principle is, I'm going to serve first. That's the going first principle. I want to go first. I'm going to be one that's going to serve. And that's what he's trying to teach them here. Whoever wishes to be first among you shall be slave of all. Do you think if I'm serving other people, I have time to look at what's going on in my life? That might be helpful to distract, to be a healthy distraction. And in this case, when Christ talks about his service, he says he's coming to serve, to give his life a ransom for many. And that the very act of giving his whole entire life devoted to people who didn't care about him necessarily, didn't love him, hated him, he still served them. That's who he served. And so he served by giving his entire life to service. And I wanted to start there before we start getting into some of the letters, the epistles, and looking at service. When we think about service, a lot of times, I'll save that for later. Let's just save that for later. Forget I said that. If y'all can edit that out, we'll go back to that later on. Okay. So Philippians chapter 2. Have y'all read this before, this passage? So do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit. What is empty conceit? What does that mean? Do you have other versions? You don't expect a reward. What's that? Yes, not for personal glory or personal reward of any kind, right? I'm not doing this because for selfish reasons, for selfish motivations, and I'm not doing it because I want everybody to see, oh, look at me. I went down to some Central American country and painted a wall that was painted by those people a week before, right? And took pictures and hashtag service for Jesus, and everybody sees me, right? That is not why we're doing a thing, right? Probably, Josh, what are you talking about? Maybe that's something I preach to the young adults or something like that. But we don't do it for something just to post. We're not doing it for the gram. We're not doing it for anything but just to help other people, right? It should be our motivation. Don't do anything for selfishness or empty conceit. The opposite of that is humility. Opposite of these things is humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves. Is that a really like popular thought? Is that a popular thought? Why is it not popular? Why do we not like to be humble? Why do we not like to think about other people and helping them as more important than ourselves? Yes, sir. Yes, we want, like, I don't want to get cut in line. I want to make sure that I get what I deserve. Like, I want the best for myself. That's exactly right. It's self-preservation. If nobody else is looking out for me, that's true in some sense. Nobody else in the world is looking out for me. But is somebody looking out for me? Yes, obviously. It's a different perspective on things. Regard one another as more important than yourselves. We're even taught not to think that, right? You're important. You're great. And all this self, you know, building up the ego and building people up. And there's a need for that, a healthy sense of self. But a healthy sense of self says it's okay that I think well of other people. It's okay that I serve. Because I know who I am. And I know who I am in His eyes. And I'm good. Right? I can serve. I can be humble. I can do what I need to do because I'm content there. Right? And so I can serve from that place. In this version, New American Standard Version, it says, do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. The actual text says, do not merely look out for your own, but also look out for others. Does that take on, it doesn't change much, but do you understand what we're saying? Don't look out for whatever your own is, for your own family, for your own, don't leave that undone. There are things we need to do. But look out for others as well. And this gets into the heart of service, in that I need to be able to see, I need to be able to recognize people around me. But if I'm caught up in my own trials and my own things that are going on, which is easy to do, guys. I'm not standing before you as someone who's like perfected that. I'll come in here, Mr. Grumpy Pants, sometimes and be like focused on self and not thinking about everything that's going on. And there's all these people that I could be helping, right? Or even in wherever anybody is, right? So we need to make sure that we understand that looking outward raises our heads up and gets us focused on other people. And this is the very, very first thing, is not thinking about me all the time. Galatians 6, and we'll come back to this in another context as well, but in this context, let us not lose heart in doing good. What are some reasons why we might lose heart in trying to help people? Why might we lose heart in trying to help or trying to serve? There's a lack of appreciation, like in chorus here between two. So that's like a number one thing. They don't appreciate what I've done, right? Mom cleans the kitchen. Kids come in and destroy said kitchen 30 minutes later. And doesn't clean anything up. They don't appreciate, right? And that's an honest answer. They don't appreciate what I've done for them. What are some other reasons why doing good is difficult? We might lose heart. It's taking too long. In what way?
When we give advice, usually one person takes it right then.
You mean they might not listen to us? What in the world? Yeah, so they're not reacting maybe the way we think. They're taking too long to respond in a healthy way that we've given the information. I've handed you all the right answers with a bow on top, right? And you're not doing anything with it. It's taking too long for you to act with whatever this is. So you kind of lose heart in trying to help somebody. And there's a lot of different ways. And all these things are normal things, but when we can change our thought to where my thought is, I'm serving, I'm doing what I need to do no matter what you do. And because in all reality, who am I serving by serving somebody else? Who am I ultimately serving? Am I serving that person? Yes, but why? What's my motivation? Glory goes to God. I'm serving God. I'm working for this person. But I'm seeing God in what I'm doing. And hopefully they're seeing God in what I'm doing. But you understand what I'm saying, then, that I'm not doing it for them. So whether they respond, whether they appreciate it, that doesn't matter. That moves it beyond my response to that, what I feel should happen in response. Like, that's very difficult. That's difficult because when I help somebody, I feel like there's a certain thing they're supposed to do. Like, they need to write me a card, they need to say thank you, and there's these things that we have in place in our own minds of how people should respond to our help. But when I move away off that and move back to where I'm doing this because I'm serving God, then it removes that, whatever we called it last time, bias about how we feel that they should respond. It removes that, and I can serve and serve God in doing that. But in due time, we'll reap if we do not grow weary. So then while we have opportunity, and this is an interesting concept, and I kind of wanted to talk about this just a little bit. Opportunity presents itself for me to serve. And I have the ability and the means. An opportunity may present itself, but I don't know how to change a tire on the side of the road while people are going by at 80 miles an hour. That's an opportunity, but not an ability that I have or a means maybe that I have, right? You see what I'm saying? So there might be an opportunity, and if I have that, the ability and the means to help, could that translate into my responsibility? I see an opportunity. I have the knowledge and the know-how to do it. I have the means to do it. I'm not talking about whether it's convenient. I'm not talking about whether it's easy or hard. That's when it might translate into my responsibility. Where do we see that? Where is there a biblical story where, you know, there are people who didn't help this poor individual? The Good Samaritan, right? I mean, he's got hospitals named after him and all kinds of stuff. Super popular guy. So he had the ability. He had the means. If there's more he lacks, I'll pay when I return. Obviously, the opportunity was there for him, and it became his responsibility. Who is my brother? Who do I need to serve? Who is my neighbor? That's who your neighbor is. If I can put it into a formula for us, that's who our neighbor becomes. And again, it's because we're serving Christ. And there's, and that's a very general thing. Details we'll talk about later, maybe. And you have to decide that for yourself. But when we help somebody, we need to make sure that we're doing that to help one another as we have opportunity to serve. When we think about service and we think about benevolence in a larger picture, a lot of times we think, well, the church needs to be feeding all the poor and housing everybody and that kind of stuff. Is that what the church needs to be doing? Christ did it because it was prophesied that he would do that. Him doing that was fulfillment of prophecy. When we come together as a saints, we come together as a church to worship. But when we go out into the community, who are we still? The church. So me serving becomes my personal responsibility. Me serving, while yes, in some sense, me serving is I make a contribution, and part of that contribution may go to help somebody. But me serving is face-to-face service. Me serving is getting involved in whatever that item is. And we'll talk more about that later. In this text specifically, it says, and especially those who are the household of faith. There's an emphasis on taking care of the saints. There's an emphasis on our responsibility to one another and taking care of one another and serving one another. Where did we see that early on in the first century church? What chapter in Acts did that start? Do you remember? In 2. It started in 2, right? The church started in Acts chapter 2, and the church taking care of the church started in Acts chapter 2. They saw needs and they helped one another, and the church came together. And there's that emphasis of the church doing that. And so that should become part of something that we do as well. In Acts 20, when Paul was with the elders, he says, he's talking to them, he's like, I didn't cover anybody's clothes or gold or any their Nikes or anything. Right? I didn't cover anything they had, covet anything they had. But these hands, I can imagine him, because he's with them when he's saying this, I can imagine him holding his hands out before them. These hands did what? To my own needs and those of others, right? This goes right back to Philippians 2, right? He saw not only his own needs, but the needs of others. He was serving. What is he wanting them to do in this passage? What does he want them to do? The same thing, right? I showed you that by working maybe an hour a week, or 30 minutes every other month. What do you say in the text? By working hard. Is it going to be easy? Is being a Christian easy? I mean, just let's put it out there. It is not always the easiest thing. I'm not saying that it's like, oh, woe is me. I'm not like, we're not Eeyore-ing this, all right? But what I'm saying is, like, being a Christian, we are valiant people. We have a moral code to live up to that brings us into the presence of God as far as being a holy people, right? We have a service, a work ethic that's been example to us higher than anybody else, right? We have that before us, and that should be who we are. Being a Christian, I work hard at serving and being helpful to others, being a blessing to others. We'll talk some about how we can do that, but I showed you how by working hard, you must help the weak. And remember the words of Jesus that he said to himself, it is more blessed to give than to receive. We help those who are weak to get stronger, self-sufficient. We don't help people to stay so they stay weak, right? We help people to mature and get stronger and that they can do the same for others. That's a healthy, normal way that we should be doing things. There's a process that we go through. There's an expectation. 2 Thessalonians 3, 10 through 12 talks about there are people who just stopped working altogether. Well, Jesus is coming back soon. They were singing that song, Jesus is coming soon, morning or night or noon. So they just said, well, I'm going to stop working. And people just stopped. And like everybody else had to take care of them. And they became busybodies and started getting themselves into trouble. And he said, no, that's not how it works. That's not how it works. So there is an expectation that we do what we can, but there are times when everybody needs help. There are times when everybody needs some sort of service that we all have the ability to help in some form or fashion. And in doing so, it takes our minds, distracts us off whatever it is that might be lingering in the background was kind of turned inside out. Love without hypocrisy, Romans 12 talks about that very same thing. Let love be without hypocrisy. When James talks about the concept of, you know, you see a brother in need, hunger or food, go, you know, I'll pray for you. Be warm and filled, right? That's the biblical, James kind of does that whole, I'll just pray for you kind of thing, right? James sets it out there. It's like, that's not necessarily, I'm not discounting prayer. Please hear me. I'm not discounting prayer. But sometimes that becomes, well, that's all I'm going to do for somebody. When I have within my own ability, opportunity, and means to actually help them, I'm not doing what maybe I should be doing. And so love without hypocrisy does those things. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor, not lagging in diligence. Fervent and persevering in tribulation, devoted to prayer, contributing to the needs of the saints. How? By practicing hospitality. Has hospitality waned? Has it waned? It has during COVID, right? Because I don't want, you know, what you got, right? So maybe because of COVID. But even before COVID, how many times have you been to somebody's house? Before COVID. How many times have you been in your neighbor's home? How many times has your neighbor been in your home? Before COVID. How often are we using our homes in that way to glorify God that way? Yes. Oh, yeah, the Pinterest home. Yes, yes, because my house is one that, mine's not like that either. Mine's a house I actually live in. It's not a museum. Did you ever, like, were your parents ever like that? Parents that might have had, like, I had a grandmother that had, like, or a great-grandmother that had, like, a plastic cover on her couch. There was, like, the room. It was like, you don't go in this room. This is the museum room, right? And so, yeah, no, like, honestly, does anybody live in a museum? Raise your hand if your home is 100% all the time museum quality. Like a curator comes in with a white glove and does this. Is that true for anybody? No. Can we be real with people and just say, hey, this is my house? I mean, I'm not saying you leave your dirty laundry out or anything, but I'm just, you know, shove it in your bedroom because everybody else does that. But hospitality has waned. We're not opening our homes like we used to. As in general, I say we, like the whole we. It's waning. Use the resources that God has blessed us with to help, to serve. And in one way we can do that is showing hospitality. I want to look at this principle, the concept of the law of sowing and reaping. Have you heard of this before? It's a natural law, right? Put a seed in the ground, and all things being equal, the seed should come up, right? And it should produce more seeds. It's just how it works. Same of kind. It's also a spiritual law. I'm going to go back to Galatians chapter 6 again, beginning in verse 7. Do not be deceived, rather. God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, this will he also reap. Do you think anybody's tricking God? Nobody's tricking God, right? It's just not going to happen. You're not going to try and do some things, or maybe if I do this, God will bless me in this way and I'll get what I really want. No, obviously not. God is not deceived. God is not deceived. Whatever a man sows, this will he also reap. For the one who sows in his own flesh will from his flesh reap corruption, but the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life. And this goes on to what we talked about earlier, not losing heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. So it's a spiritual law as well, as far as this concept of sowing and reaping. It implies that there's a time to wait. I don't know if you've ever planted anything before, but it's not instant, right? When you plant something, it just boop up again, right? You're waiting a while for them tomatoes to come up, okay? So you're waiting a while for something. In Tennessee, I don't know what the deal was, but everybody was growing tomatoes. And everybody was talking about their tomatoes. And like, oh my, what kind of tomatoes are you growing? And what time? Well, you didn't plant them early. And I'm like, so everybody loved tomatoes. But I don't know. Anyway, so you got to wait for the tomatoes to come up. Cindy knows what I'm talking about. So you got to wait for the tomatoes to come up. It takes time. You sow a seed, and however long it takes. Now, this is a spiritual concept as well. Have you sown a seed in the heart of somebody and expected, all right, any minute now, any minute, they're going to look like Jesus. Any minute, I sowed the seed. It might take years for that to happen. Years. And you have no idea who else needs to water on that. Paul said, Apollos, what? Yep, we had somebody that planted, Apollos watered, and God gave the increase, right? So there's that concept that, look, it's going to take time, and you don't know how long it's going to take, but we need to make sure that we're doing that. It implies a weight. It's going to reap in kind. If I sow to the flesh, that is, if I do things to please the flesh, I will from the flesh reap those things, that it's just going to be fleshly. It's not going to be spiritual kind of thing, but if I sow to the Spirit, I will reap those benefits that would be from the Spirit. It will reap in kind. And we reap proportionately to what we sow. 2 Corinthians, talking about specifically the offering, but 2 Corinthians chapter 9, beginning of verse 6. Now this I say, he who sows sparingly will reap sparingly. He who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each one must do just as he has purpose in his heart, not begrudgingly under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. Now, this in general is true, right? This is in general. When I'm serving somebody, are they always going to serve me back to the degree that I've served? And if I serve somebody with a pure heart, humbleness of mind, in all the right ways and all the right characteristics, should I be expecting anything back? No. If everything is going the way it should, I should not expect anything back. But if I'm not doing anything, if I'm not serving, well, they're not gonna give me. Do you think God's taking notice of these things? Yes. I don't necessarily. Would I rather want? I'm serving an individual, whoever, and I serve them and I help them in some way. Would you rather have that reward from that individual, or would you rather have the reward that your Father has waiting for you? Which one would you rather have? I'll think what God, yeah. So I don't need to serve with the concept that I'm in that moment wanting to get instant gratification and get something back necessarily in that service. So we reap proportionally to what we sow, but not always here, right? Not here as far as the expectation as what that looks like. Now, in serving people, how do I serve? I serve others physically. There are physical things that I can do, and I tried to make a comp. Can y'all even read that? Not really? Okay. I'll start handing out, like, binoculars in the background, for the pews in the back. But it's a list of 25 things. Not comprehensive by any means, but just to give you, there are a myriad of ways that we can physically help somebody, serve them in some way. There's some way that we can serve. This is not comprehensive by any means, and you know people and know circumstances that you could help. Either get them in contact, if not you, maybe somebody can serve in some way. But there are ways that we can serve people physically. And when we think about this, this is probably the most common way people serve. Why would we say this is the most common way that we serve? It can be easy, right? It can be easy. Did you guys ever have, like, the mean person on the street? Or the person that was, like, if they were outside, you would, like, hide in the bushes because no matter what was going on, like, they were going to yell at you for something? As a kid, we had a lady that was, like, across the street and two houses down that was like that. Mean. Like, no matter what happened, mean. And this was in Idaho, and something happens there that doesn't happen here. Snow. When snow happens, you have to, like, get rid of said snow. Because they might, like, plow your street, but do you think they, like, take the time to, like, get it out of your driveway when they plow it? No, you have, like, a 3-foot berm that now I have to back out of on my street, right? So we would go over, not let her know we were doing it. We would go over and shovel her drive and then come back real quickly because she might still yell at us. Like, one day she caught us. I don't know if you've ever been caught by your parents doing something you probably shouldn't have been doing. I don't know, but I would freeze. Like, maybe they won't see me if I don't move, right? So that's kind of what we did. We kind of froze because we weren't sure what she was going to say. But her complete demeanor, when she found out who it was, her demeanor changed completely. She was kind to us. She would greet, like, completely changed. Just because we shovel her sidewalk, right? There are people going through things you have no idea. Like, I have no idea whatever happened to her or what happened that she was in that position. But kindness, can really go a long way with people. It opens doors, and serving people, it might be easy, it might be a small thing, right? But it opens doors that maybe we're able to step through with the gospel later on. And in all of our service, I'm not saying, yeah, I am saying this. In all of our service, we need to make sure that, you know, we can serve people physically, but there are other ways that we can do things more importantly, and that is serving others spiritually. I can help them with their physical needs, but that might come up again later on. But if I help them with their spiritual needs, that's an eternity kind of thing, right? That's a game changer. And so here are a few ways that we can help one another spiritually, help one another here, help our neighbors, help people, and just letting people know. How many times have you had somebody say to you, I'll pray for you specifically for this thing? Or you're sharing with somebody, this is going on in my life, and so I will pray for that thing. But how many times have you said it to somebody who's a complete stranger, or somebody who you have no idea if they even believe in the power of prayer, or if they even have a concept of what prayer is? We don't do that very often. But these are ways that we can serve one another, and we can even do some of these things without people even knowing it, right? Can you pray for somebody and they don't even know you're doing it? Probably, and it probably should be that way, right? In some cases. But we can serve one another spiritually. We can serve one another emotionally. It gets into kind of a different aspect of things. When we look at just the most common ways of serving one another emotionally, we can be a sounding board for people. People come to us, maybe talk to us about things that are going on in their lives, and one of those things is acceptance, showing empathy and validating their feelings. Have you just needed somebody to tell you that you're not crazy and how you're thinking about something? That maybe this is what it is? Or you needed somebody the opposite, the reprisal, and that is somebody that's maybe helping us see things a different way, that maybe can in a way say, well, maybe you should look at it from this perspective, and it really might change things for us. And so these are ways that are the most common ways that we can serve and help one another emotionally. But did you know that in doing this, helping each other emotionally, it actually helps me? It physically helps me. If I can help somebody else emotionally, it actually helps me put things in perspective and make sure that I'm doing these things. I'm saying this, am I doing it as well, right? We are enhancing our own emotional regulation skills by helping other people as well. Did you know that serving other people has health benefits? AARP doesn't show you this very often, do they? So stress reduction. Serving others actually increases feelings of pleasure and levels of dopamine in the brain. So when somebody says, it's my pleasure, they are saying it actually correctly. There are different ways of releasing dopamine. That pleasure hormone in your brain. I was going to say drug, but it's not drug. That pleasure hormone in the brain that is associated with anything that's pleasurable. And so it can be somebody, so you've seen somebody that's always serving, always helping. Have you met that person? You're like, where do they have the energy to keep doing this? Their dopamine levels are through the roof when they keep doing this for the right reason. Increased sense of community and belonging as far as health benefits, increased optimism, new sense of perspective, increased happiness. All these things increase when I start helping other people. Is that opposite of where I am when I'm focusing on an issue that's going on in my life? That's where I want to be, right? I want to be on that side of things. And so serving others helps us in taking a great step into being there. And then lastly, and we'll close with this, we've got to be doing it for the right reasons. And this is science says this. Bible said it first, but we need to be doing it for the right reasons. What are they saying here about the right reasons? It only works, right? 2012, and this is outdated maybe, a study of the Journal of Health of Psychology found that participants who volunteered with some regularity lived longer. If you volunteered, you helped, it equated to living longer. But only if they were doing it, their intentions were altruistic. In other words, they were doing it because they wanted to help others. They weren't doing it for Instagram. They weren't doing it for have something to post on Facebook, right? They weren't doing it for some other ulterior motive. They were doing it because they really wanted to help. If I'm doing it for the right reasons and I'm doing it love without hypocrisy, it helps me live longer. The Bible had it a long time ago, right? As far as those kind of things. So is it for our good when God asks us to serve, when God wants us to live better, and he's saying, you need to serve, you need to be a servant of all. If I'm gonna practice the go first principle and being a servant of all, God says you're gonna live a healthier life. You're gonna live a healthier life. So how do we deal with things when things go wrong? We make sure we're trying to do something to help serve other people and get some perspective on things. Any thoughts or comments before we close tonight? I was that thorough. Awesome. Thank you very much for your time tonight. Appreciate it. Y'all have a good week.